to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week three of us read up on a topic and discuss it from a geeky, nerdy perspective. This week, I am your host, Keaton Kodish. I know you missed me. And we will be discussing The Darkest Dungeon and storytelling that is told through mechanics. So, like, I guess mechanically driven narratives. I'm joined by two people, each of whom has selected a domain that they think connects to our topic and theme this week. We'll see if they're right. They are...
Hi, I'm Kaimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prepher. I will be repping the indie game Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor.
Cool. I am Jonavi, and I will be repping a game called Kindergarten.
Cool. All right, so... We're going to start by summarizing our topics and domains before we openly discuss. Finally, we'll close with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether today's topic is enjoyable. So really, they need to please me through the course of this discussion. Let's get started. So first things first, we're going to summarize what this is. Now, for those of you who don't know, The Darkest Dungeon is a role-playing video game developed by Red Hook Studios. It was released in 2016. It has been referred to as a gothic roguelike turn-based RPG about the psychological stresses of adventuring. Now, for story-wise, does anyone want to give what... the kind of the vague outline of narrative you get initially? Does anyone else want to cover that?
Sure, I can do that.
Cool.
It's in my skill set.
Fake openings.
Yeah, so the sort of intro part of the game starts as this narrator person is describing, like, oh, we have this super neato rich mansion, and then I got bored with being so opulent. They also, bonus points for using the word antediluvian in a game. I feel like that increased my enjoyment of the game. Anyway, he's writing this letter to his next of kin, saying, like, oh, I've done something horrible. I've unleashed this, like, bad monstrosity because I went digging too far into the foundations of our home. Because that's what you do when you just have it too good in life.
Yeah, you turn to occult mysteries and dark magic. That's pretty straightforward.
It seems pretty standard.
Yeah, you know, like, sometimes you just accidentally open up a basement that's just full of H.P. Lovecraft books, you know?
It's a heck of a retirement plan. I mean, what can I tell you?
I mean, is it accidental? No, you do it on purpose. You don't stumble upon it, okay?
Yeah, yeah. He went for it and then regretted it and wanted his... younger and presumably dumber compatriot to bail him out. Yeah, and then he's like, oh yeah, bring adventurers and stuff and, like, help recapture our family home.
Because things suck here now.
Yeah, look. Cosmic horror. Lovecraft.
Yeah, very well summarized. Basically, a rich guy for the story that we are given is writing to you and you play as kind of like, you know, the descendant. The heir to this guy who's never really named other than then being called the ancestor. And basically he said, hey, come to your birth home and come, you know, reclaim it from all these monsters I've unleashed. And there's a few different areas in the game where you go, a few different dungeons where you fight different kinds of monsters and there's different bosses and whatnot. Eventually you try to defeat the highest level, which is the mansion. You go back there, I think, 4 times.
I also think it's worth mentioning that the ancestor never even really says, sorry, I unleashed all these monsters. Like,
well, he did shoot himself at the end of his letter, so that is a kind of a... It wasn't like, oh, well, now that I've done it, fuck you, dude.
I know, but there's an escape shooting yourself and a, I believe I'm executing myself in justice. So, I don't know.
You're right. I would say it's more in the middle right there. Yeah, but he never explicitly says... He does say it's all my fault a bunch, though, but he never apologizes for it. But he is remorseful. And, Chowder, can you explain the gameplay for it real quick?
Yeah. All right. So the main crux of Darkest Dungeon is two parts. You got the turn-based combat part where characters are in a line and depending on in what order they are, they can use certain attacks. And if that order is disrupted or changed, they're unable to do those attacks. There are various status effects such as poison and bleeding, but also mental status effects such as...
stress.
Stress. If a character becomes too stressed, they'll gain debuffs like kleptomaniac, greedy, douchebag.
Yeah, they become...
their weaknesses.
Yeah, they become afflicted. You basically have a secondary health bar, which is called like your stress. And when you reach 100 stress, you get a period of you either become afflicted or you what's the term? What do they call it exactly? I got it so little. I never really.
I think it was like inspired or something.
Something akin to
that. Or resolve, strengthened, or whatever.
Resolve. Yeah,
you get resolve. There we go.
So you either gain a bonus, which is very rare. It's like in less than 10% of the times you get it, you'll get someone that, instead of getting a negative aspect, they'll actually get a positive one, like inspiring or courage or something. Yeah. But most of the time, it goes down. And in fact, if you get over 200 stress, you actually, your health goes all the way down to zero, and you risk dying of a heart attack, people. I'm not kidding. You literally, your character will die of a heart attack. And that is it, because they're so stressed out. Yeah, so that's... And through, you know, you play through the dungeons, you encounter various different enemies.
The game makes a big deal out of saying that there can be no bravery without madness.
Oh, so. Yes. The flavor text in the game and, like, the narration, I find, makes everything so much better.
I mean, 50% of the game seems to be atmosphere.
Oh my god, there's so much. It's Dark Souls meets Pokemon. for all those of you.
Please tell me that's how they marketed this.
That's how I marketed to people, because, like I said, it's a turn-based...
I think we just found the title of the episode.
Yeah. and it's very much like Dark Souls, listeners. It's, you know, it's very gothic horror, lots of medieval stuff, with, you know, a few different things thrown in. It's got all that good stuff, you know, Lovecraftian kind of themes.
The Dark Souls of Pokemon ripoffs.
I'm imagining, like, a little Cthulhu in a Pokeball or something. I can see it.
And then throughout the game, you know, you upgrade your people. Because you as the narrator are just kind of, like, controlling things. A lot like the way Ash Ketchum never actually fights.
Yeah, it's sort of like a business management kind of thing, you know? Like, you get adventurers to,
you gotta,
like,
be careful not to burn out your top employees, because when they're dead, they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hire adventurers, you take care of their stress levels by having them do things like pray at church, or drink at a bar, or fuck whores.
But even then, there's actually, even within there, there's stuff that happens that you can actually get a negative trait for your characters that, like, only makes them go to one place to de-stress. Like, I have a bounty hunter, one of the classes of heroes, and he can only go gamble. The issue with this, though, is that every once in a while, there's a lot of, like, little random things that happen in the game, and every once in a while, I'll get, like, an update after I put him away, and then every, like, phase of the game is, like, a week. You prepare, you go on an adventure, you come back. Whether you're all dead, or you had to run away, or you succeed, either way, that's your week. And every once in a while, you'll come back, and they'll be like, oh, well, Bobby spent so much money that he actually lost some of your money, and some of your cool upgrade trinkets. And I'm just like, god damn it, Bobby, you son of a bitch. You gotta stop, like, upgrading, you know?
And then you pistol whip him in-game.
Oh, man, I... There was one character who lost me so much, I dismissed him on the spot. Just because, like...
It's not worth it.
No, it wasn't worth it. It was, like, a low level. I was like, I don't even need you, man.
Would he grow... Okay, so can characters, like, negate some of their negative tendencies if they increase... Or, like, if they continue?
Yes. In some ways.
But it's really expensive to do that, so...
Yeah, you can actually go to one of the upkeep places is the sanitarium. And you go there to...
A sanitarium that works?
Right.
In this environment? Of all places?
It's weird. You can pay
again, it's really expensive.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's like the most, one of the most expensive things in the game.
Oh my goodness.
You can pay to either get rid of negative quirks, or you can pay to be like, hey, I really like this one quirk and I really want to keep this. So you pay money for like, make them really good at fighting in certain areas, or that they're more likely to have better resolve and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So like, it's not so much that they cancel each other out, it's that you can manage it.
Yeah. Oh, big important thing. A lot of these things, the gambling, the upgrades, the sanitarium,
mm-hmm.
they all cost money, except for the adventures not cost money. They come from, like, the caravan.
The stagecoach, yeah.
The stagecoach, yeah, where you can just go and hire people for free, I guess. And
yeah, they're usually, the trade-off is, though, that unless you really upgrade that area, they're low level.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like zero. Like, I think the highest I've ever gotten is like a level 4 out of 6.
Yeah.
It's kind of the highest you get. And that was after a lot of, you know, money being put into it and upgrading a lot of skills.
Also, in the turn-based combat half of the game, there's a mechanic of the torchlight where...
Oh, yes, the torchlight.
Yeah, like the brighter the torchlight, the weaker the enemies you fight are, and the less stressed your adventurers will become. But the darker it is, you end up fighting more monsters and get more stressed, but the loot is much better.
Yes.
So you can pay for all the therapy you need to get over it.
Or what some people advise doing.
And what I do.
Yeah, what he does is you can just get a bunch of fresh people.
Oh no!
Shut off the lights, give them no extra really good like trinkets or anything. Send them into a dungeon, have them, like, rake up money, get really hurt in the process and really stressed out, and instead of going, you earned a rest, just be like, goodbye.
Like, just dismiss them all, hire more people, and do it over again.
Yeah, and upkeep your, like, your 8 or your 6 main people.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is a business.
Yeah, this is, like...
I'm glad you guys have it all figured out.
No, I actually don't do this.
I think one of the best quotes about Darkest Dungeon comes from a reviewer named Jim Sterling. He says that the best way to succeed in Darkest Dungeon is to put yourself in the mindset of a wannabe sociopathic CEO, which is very accurate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But basically, like, well, despite this being a video game in which you play, we've talked mostly in the summary about gameplay. Because, as we discussed, the opening is very vague. It's just kind of a, you know, it's a vehicle to get you there. And then from there on, there's no real narrative besides you finding out more information. Whenever you go confront a boss, your ancestor will recount how this boss came to be. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's this, there's a boss called the Swine God, right? He has 3 different incarnations, just like all the bosses. You have 3 different versions of them. And basically, you know, he'll just be like, oh, yes, I remember that. I kept trying to summon a demon, and he needed, like, a form. And so he took this pig, and it was expensive and gross, but, you know, I had so much money. Yeah, no, that's basically, that's most of them, honestly.
That's the rationale behind doing this, I guess.
Yeah, so, like, you go through all of them, and, like, you don't actually, your heroes don't have any real, like, backstory. There's, like, some you can look up, because they actually have, like, comics. They're, like, 1 page for each hero, but really, mm-hmm. besides from what they say... and what happens to them through your playing, you don't really have a story to follow besides just there was a thing that happened and you're here to fix it.
Yeah, the kind of motive, I guess, you get is just, like, restoring the family honor, which, I mean, could also just mean, like, getting a lot of money, like how people do through adventuring.
Yeah, but, like, what even is your family? You don't even really know besides this one guy who tells you about it.
Oh, I know, but his purported... motivation is just like
cash money.
Yeah, it's kind of cash money, but also
kill
being
monsters,
like
get money.
Maybe if you're some kind of long lost relative of his, you're supposed to feel like, oh, I used to be somebody like really important or part of like an important family, and like maybe he's trying to play off some kind of family hubris.
I get that.
It's hard to tell, but I think the primary thing is just like. Is indeed that good cash money.
Yeah, and we'll get back to that right after we go through our domains, but that's a good thought. Let's keep that. Let's put it in there. So first thing, let's, yeah, like I said, let's move on to the domains. This is where basically I'll let you guys kind of talk about and summarize what you've brought to the table. So, Chowder, well, you brought something called, you know, some, you know, sanitation on a spaceman's guild or something. Tell us about that. Very good listener.
So, Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor is a game that's about, you play as this sanitation worker who lives in this fantastical world where heroes are constantly strolling by on their way to their next adventure, their next dungeoneering and stuff. But you are not an adventurer, but she wants to be. One day she decides to go, fuck it, let me just go into one of these dungeons. But bad luck strikes when she accidentally gets cursed. So you're just living out this character's day-to-day life, trying to scrape by, making money, and, like, try to get enough money to, like, pay to get the curse removed. And, yeah, and the reason I chose Diaries of Spaceport Janitor is that it is a game that is very, bleak and very, like, tiring to play because, like, you are put in a very disadvantaged situation. You are basically playing a character who is constantly in poverty. You get paid depending on how much trash you collect, and
nice.
And how much you get paid is not very good. You can also, like, try to make extra money by taking some of the trash and selling it to, like, various merchants throughout the city. But, like, what they're buying at any given time is random, so there's no real way to predict what you can sell them or not sell them.
So they made it to space, but they don't have Craigslist anymore?
Also, we still have janitors? No.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and there's, like, a day-night cycle, so you only have so much time to do stuff.
Oh, no.
You have to make sure to pay for things like food, medicine, rent, all that type of stuff.
Well, it's not very realistic, but okay.
Yeah, who pays for rent?
Or food? Who needs either of those?
Yeah.
Medicine?
Jokes. So, yeah, you're always on, like, the razor's edge of, like,
poverty,
having, scraping by and just trying to make just enough money to survive. And, like, things can go wrong. Like, say, a guard might rob you because he thinks he can just
do what he wants. Thinks
you can't defend yourself, you know, so.
So you have to defend yourself?
Well, it sounds like he can't. Yeah, do you defend yourself?
Nope. You can't.
Oh. What? All right,
so this whole game is this, or does it go any further, or?
Yeah, you know, like, eventually you can, like, get the curse removed, but you're still poor. And, like, the thing is, like, the game is, like, full of hints of, like there's something bigger you can be a part of, but not really, because throughout the game you'll, like, see heroes, like, drop items like spell tomes and used up bullets or whatever, and it's, like, the kind of stuff you'd see in a normal game, but, like, you can't use it because you're not rich enough. Like, there will be vendors who sell, like, armor and amulets and stuff, but, like, they're so expensive that you would never be able to afford them. There is a price on them, and you could theoretically get to that price, but it's never gonna happen, so.
Alright. Let's move on to Genevieve. Genevieve, what did you bring to your table? You brought a
kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yes.
Yes.
K-12, the game. Nice. The anti-bully simulator. So tell me, what do you do? What is kindergarten about?
So kindergarten is kind of like you are playing as a kindergartner at your first day of school.
I love it.
You go to a very interesting school. If you bother the janitor too much, he will murder you.
What? Wait a minute.
You have to, the objective that sort of becomes clear as you sort of go through the game and are, like, talking to the other kids, the teacher trying to figure stuff out.
Is not talking to the janitor?
Is that you have to figure out, or, like, you can figure out through iterations of playing the game what happened to this kid that disappeared. And in case you want to play it, I would recommend Kindergarten. It is very dark. It is very funny in its dark way. And, I mean, you should have been sold at child murder, really.
I mean, who says I wasn't?
So the gameplay aspect of this is sort of the detective problem-solving aspect of it. You have to sort of go on quests for different characters, which will help you acquire different, you know, items you need to do the quests for other characters, and eventually you get to the end of the game, There are a lot of really interesting characters in there. You have a kid that's like a bully.
No.
You have like a little, the girl version of a bully.
Which is a lot like a bully, but different.
I mean, kind of. I'm just figuring on you. Yeah. So there's a kid who's just like, you know, the kid that's a little weird that nobody else really seems to like. He just collects chicken nuggets and has made like a pit full of chicken nuggets on the playground.
Seems a waste of chicken nuggets, but all right.
Yeah, so like it's really a game that it is kind of like all about the characters and the strangeness, the absurdity, how everyone kind of sucks except for like a couple of characters.
Everyone sucks.
And it's a lot of fun to just sort of be like, all right, how do I solve this puzzle, like, given the, like, surreal logic of this game? Especially since you need to do certain quests to get items, and then you end up going through, like, kind of the same day again. And that's never exactly explained when you get to the end. So it adds to this kind of, like, surreal element of, like, all right, I gotta figure out, like, what to do now, given that I have this, this, and that. So that's Kindergarten.
Dope. I love it.
Dun, 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 dun.
With all our topics in the main summarized, let's move on to the discussion. Now, the reason why I wanted to discuss this game is because, as we discussed to you, it has no real story in between, like, our initial narrative and, like, our ending, like, little cutscene. Other than that, there's, like, nothing really there besides, like, flavor text that you can learn. And, like, some slight flavor narration.
And who lives and dies while they conquer darkness.
Yeah, basically, you know.
In the game.
Getting the treasure is the first part. The second part is making it home. That's like, oh shit, man, you're right. But basically, through the way you play the game, that's where the story comes in. Because odds are, most of your, like, negative quirks don't come from just random things. I kept using this one guy to, like, because as you travel the dungeon, there's basically two parts of the dungeon. There's a room, and then the corridor in between rooms. And you have to walk through the corridor. And when you're in the corridor, there's things called curios, which are like just random things. Like a pile of bones, a tree stump, a sacrificial altar, you know, a confessional booth. And you can choose to interact with this with one of your characters that you have in your line. And sometimes it's good, most of the time it's bad, and sometimes literally nothing happens. It's like, sometimes a tree is just a tree. But, like, one time, I kept using this one guy to do it, and he became a kleptomaniac. And because he's a kleptomaniac, he would then, if I had him in my party, he would steal stuff from other party members if I found gold and stuff. Like, I would find, like, 10 gold, or, you know, whatever measurement, and he'd be like, that's mine, and then it would disappear, because it's his now, I guess. It was great. But the Orange Lantern Oath. But I think the best story that I have for, like, how this game makes story is how Mauricio almost wiped my party. Now, Mauricio was a crusader, a knight, basically. And Mauricio was in, the crusader is basically only effective in, like, the first two spots, right?
Yeah.
He's a heavy hitter, you know, they can take damage, and they can deal it out. And they have a bunch of stuff that's usually about, like, amping up their own attacks. And maybe,
they're very,
like,
inquisitive if they're Spanish.
Yeah, right? And very, actually, there's a few that are, like, holy proclamation. And, like, mm-hmm. calling things heretics, basically, you know, it's great. But basically, I was in a dungeon, right? And I had my four people, and I was going through, and then Mauricio got so stressed he became a coward. Cowardice happened to him. And he ran to the back of the line. Now, by moving to the back of the line, he then became useless. There's no abilities he had that used in the back two spots, right? However, everyone else also became useless. So instead of, like, actually attacking my enemies, I couldn't. I had to spend, like, the next five rounds just moving everyone around. Except, fun fact, they could still attack me during this time. So I lost Mauricio, and then I lost someone else. And then finally, I tried to retreat. Now, to leave an active battle, you have to select someone to stay behind and give you time. Right? And they may not make it. So I had to leave behind Dufour, my plague doctor, who sacrificed herself to get the final person out. And she died. And then that person left. So because Mauricio became a coward, he abandoned his post, killed two of my best people, and led to the death of a third. So, well, he was one of my people. But I
also
really
want to point out that you phrased it like, cowardice happened to him.
Well, you know, that was the affliction that got...
So, I mean, yeah, I'm curious to know if that is how you perceive the things happening in this game, as in, like, because of the situation that you put these people in, it feels like the stuff is happening to them, not an inherent trait of theirs in some way.
Well, it feels like the stuff is happening to them, like, you are responsible for their misery, and so... It's a very much like a what the hell player kind of thing, you know?
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, yeah, it's true. It does very, very, very feel very personal, but also because of, like, these things are, like, personal things that happen, it's like, oh, he lost an arm. It's, like, these mental, emotional things that happen. You then attract it to the players. And even though these characters don't really have any unique features besides you can change their color scheme and you can change the name they're auto-generated with. That's pretty much the only real distinguishable thing that one Crusader gets from a different Crusader. Besides, maybe switching around his ability set, or his like personality quirks, which are like the afflictions, and, you know, the positive quirk, negative and positive quirks.
Yeah, I mean, the game seems pretty invested in highlighting the weakness of man in various different ways, and, like, but the attitude of, like, these negative, like, traits are kind of imposed upon your characters seems to reflect kind of the main narrator dude who... I know that, like, when he expresses his, like, regret at the beginning for doing what he did to unleash all the horror, it seems to me like he regrets more what he lost than he, like, regrets doing a bad thing.
I get that.
So, anyway... I thought that was an interesting correlation.
Yeah, that's good. I was just thinking that, like, I agree with you that it does feel, and I think that you're supposed to feel like you did this, you know, because the thing is, these characters, like I said, they don't really have any personality unless you attach it to them. And the way that's formed is the game generates these things happening to them that makes them this way. And like I said, even though in reality all I did was play a few turn rounds and click a few buttons, and, you know, like I said, it's turn-based, and then, you know, some of my people, you know, wipe. Instead of that, I got this whole narrative about Mauricio facing these terrible ghouls, mm-hmm. and then becoming scared, abandoning his people, getting himself killed, leading to my, you know, a death of another, and then finally a heroic sacrifice. Even though this is a very, you know, like I said, this isn't like... None of this is expressed in game, but because of the mechanics, it makes the player feel as though these stories develop because of the mechanics within the game have given you things.
Yeah, it kind of lets you discover stories and stuff that happens as you continue.
Yeah, it's the strength of video games. Like, while the developers dictate what the nature of the story is, ultimately the player gets to tell their own story, you know? It's just something that, Darkest Dungeon takes advantage of.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting in that, like, in other sorts of narrative games that are more, like, choose your own adventure, like, your choices matter, you can get, like, various different endings, but in this one, it certainly seems like, okay, maybe you have branches to your story, but there's still just one main trunk that, like, there's still a lot of that, like, Lovecraftian inevitability, like, the darkness of the cosmos is our ending, kind of... thing, the trajectory of what it is, but sprinkled throughout, depending on what puny choices you as a mortal make, you have various people, like, just, you know, being little ants.
They're scary. Do you want to know why they're scary? Because they're fish.
Yeah, sure. So I did like that about Darkest Dungeon, and about how it, even though it has these, like, oh, your choices matter. Hey, if someone is dead, they stay dead. Like, it still preserves that very, like, atmospheric, dark inevitability aspect.
Yeah, that overall theme, you know, of inevitability. I like that. Okay. Do either of your guys' games have, like, stuff that you only get through the mechanics? You don't necessarily get from, like, someone handing it to you on a silver platter in terms of, like, narrative or a cutscene or something? You know, like, is there any, like, part of your guys' narrative that, like, only the mechanics give you?
Yeah. So as I mentioned in my domain, spaceport janitor has like these shopkeepers who are selling items. And, you know, some of those items are just food that you gotta buy to survive. But some of those are like the equipment of adventurers that are off doing amazing things that you wish you could be a part of, but you can't. And it does, and it's not like the game's like telling you this. It's just showing you an item with a price tag on it and creating an illusion that maybe you could buy it. In a regular game, you'd go to a shopkeeper and just like scroll down the list and see all the armors and weapons. You know, it's like that, but you have no hope of ever getting that. So it creates this sense of like you are locked in this loop that you can't escape, the idea that like hard work will make you a level 99 adventurer someday. It's just a pipe dream that'll never happen. And also there are like random elements to spaceport gander, such as like one time I got like food poisoning because, and I had to like pay money for medical bills, and I was just set back so far behind because I just couldn't get any more money because I'm sick and I couldn't collect trash.
So yeah. Would you say that your game was more about like simulating a particular mindset and experience than it was about a story?
Yes. The game is about like, it wants you to feel empathetic towards this character who is very much working poor. Like she has all these medical expenses she has to pay for and dreams of like bigger things, which is very much a reality of our world where people are told this narrative of work hard and someday you'll get to be a millionaire or something. But, that's just not a reality for most people. Yeah. So it's less about a story as much as it is about creating empathy for this character. When you eventually like break the curse, the game just kind of goes on. You don't, there's not really the end, and then she goes on to have the adventure she always dreamed of. It's more just you keep doing the same thing.
Do you think that the character changed in any fundamental way by the end of the game? Like, how did they feel about breaking the curse? Like, did it create some kind of mindset change or anything?
Well, the character is a silent protagonist, so she doesn't really talk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever change there is, it's whatever the player projects onto them, you know? You know, like how you project onto Link.
Right. Well, no, I don't know, since I've never actually played any of those games, but...
Yeah.
My bad.
I can't say.
Like, there are other mechanics, like your character actually can suffer from gender dysphoria, and has to like take pills to not like have that affect their life, but those pills cost money, so that's just another thing you gotta pay for on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a game about like disempowerment. It wants to be like a marginalized character looking at like these adventurers who in any other game you would be playing as, and just thinking about like what is it like to be
a side character.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because that, I think that does, it kind of, like, applies a realistic approach to that genre, a little bit like the way the Darkest Dungeon does,
yeah.
In the way that it's like, well, you know, I mean, adventuring's pretty cool, but, like, doesn't that sound like that would mess you up after a while? You know, like, you can't just keep fighting horrific monsters all the time, you know? Eldritch Beasts gotta, you know, make you feel uncomfortable every once in a while, and then yours is like, well, I mean, that's cool, but, like, who's cleaning this place? What about all the janitors on the Death Star, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like where Darkest Dungeon puts you in the position of, like, the head honcho, the guy in charge of everything, making the calls on what these adventurers are doing and going and fighting, Spaceport Janitor puts you at the bottom, making you the one who's, like...
A faceless peon of space.
A peasant, really. A lot like a kindergartner. You know, you got no real personality. You're just a kid.
Jonaby, that's your cue.
In your game, is that is there any like mechanics?
I would say the main thing that seems to drive Kindergarten is kind of like it's built upon how exploratory you have to be in order to figure stuff out and to figure out like, okay, what do these characters want? Like, can I successfully complete, like, the storyline or quest of this one character so that I can, like, do something else? And finding out about all of these, like, interconnections and in through this sort of surreal logic that kind of skates over some serious issues but treats them comedically. Like, so I think that this game is like the kindergarten game is more about plot than it is about atmosphere, because you have the storylines of each individual characters, which you have to go through and like talk to people, figure out what they want, make the correct choice so that you don't like either get killed by somebody or time it right. You only have a set number of actions sort of per scene or per time of day. And you have to use them correctly to like complete a quest and hopefully get something out of that, or like curry favor with somebody in order to, you know, sort of get what you want, discover more about like what happened with this kid's disappearance and stuff like that. So it's actually very narratively rich, and you have to, you know, but there is such a thing as like, oh, you're making the right choices in the right order to get what you need to figure out what's happening. But the process of doing that is so exploratory, and you will make lots of wrong moves puzzle-wise, and just seeing how different characters react and like how that causes problems for you or for another character is very interesting, and in some cases, like, or actually in most cases, somewhat disturbing to see. I would say that the mechanic of this is more of being, of sort of putting you as a player in the position of like, oh, haha, how do I kindergarten? Basically, like a kindergarten that is the opposite of a nurturing environment. Like a very like you have to solve all these like kind of somewhat high level things in this veneer of an elementary or like kids environment. So I don't know if the game was trying to make some kind of larger point with that, but really I think it was just trying to do that whole like juxtaposing thing to be funny. So I think that the way that the mechanics kind of play into this is not like in Timeless Game or like in Darkest Dungeon, where the point is to sort of like create an atmosphere and a mindset, it seems like, but it was to sort of touch upon like all of these bonkers storylines in the quest to resolve the like bigger story that's trying to drive you through the game.
Well, I guess that could you could say that does kind of put you in the mindset of a kid. I mean, at a kid, you probably thought that those were some pretty you know, important things that you were solving, and the janitor probably was really scary, you know.
Mm-hmm. And like also sort of it's more like, okay, if the conspiracy theory was real, sort of. And just like being a kid there and like having no context as for like what's going on initially, or like what are you even supposed to do at kindergarten? Like, you do have to kind of discover how to resolve anything as you like continue to go through these iterations of a day. Yeah, I would say that it's pretty puzzle heavy. It gives you a lot of kind of like dark material, but doesn't engage with it in a very serious way, in the way that Timeless Game does. What was it called again? Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Cool. I wasn't sure if I got that right, but yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. No. Do you guys feel as though, like, when you get a game, do you feel like the mechanics really affect gameplay in terms of narrative, or if they should just be, like, about gameplay? Or do you think that there should be a separation, or do you think that it doesn't really matter?
I think if you have a narrative, and if as a creator you want to highlight the narrative as like, oh man, this is the point. Because like a story is kind of a sweet spot of a lot of different elements, right? There's the literal like chain of narrative events.
Yeah.
In some stories, there is like some kind of point or moral that the storyteller is trying to make. And there's also then different sort of spicy elements like the atmosphere and like various ways that you express what's going on and point of view and playing with how is the story being told? Are you playing it in kind of like real time as you go through like the world of the game, first person like? Are you like one step removed, sort of like how you are with Darkest Dungeon? You're like manipulating all these characters like pawns to try and reach some kind of final end. Is it more like, oh, you're kind of playing it sort of like a platformer and you see this character go through things, but then the story is given you through given to you like in cutscenes, sort of more like a video or like someone's reading you a comic. So like there's all of these elements to what makes a story. And if that's the point of your game, I mean, I'm a proponent of you have to do everything to highlight that story the best you can. If it's for telling a story. But if the important part to you is just like, hey, wait, I want to give people a particular kind of experience. An experience is a little bit more of a fuzzy thing than a story is. Like, you can have kind of a story part of that in that, I really just want to have, like, a motive and, like, some kind of conclusion. I don't really care about, like, the nitpicks of this and that. What I really want is to highlight, like, this characteristic. And I want this to be kind of, like, a playable thesis of a particular mindset or something. So.
I do have opinions.
I do have fucking opinions. I know, but what about this one?
Okay, so general rule of thumb, I say if it works, it works. So if you have the story and gameplay mix like oil and water, but it works for the game, go for it. But I feel like more often than not, it's best to have the gameplay work together with the narrative. Like, I'm of the belief that, like, if you have a sort of story or mood or atmosphere in mind, you should make mechanics that fit to that. Like, Darkest Dungeon and Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor have a theme of capitalism sucks. And in order to do that, they have mechanics that show why capitalism sucks. Like, if they did what most other video games did and, like, you know, had you have a sense of ongoing progress and constantly on the winning end, and never making sacrifices, that bleak narrative wouldn't come through. But because Darkest Dungeon encourages you to take the cruelest path possible in, like, sacrificing people as pawns in a bigger ploy to get cash, and where Spaceport Janitor, like, constantly has you, like, just barely scraping by, no matter how hard you try, they help to convey what it is they want to convey to you way better than
or reading someone say capitalism sucks. Because I think that kind of plays into how video games can help get a point across better than sometimes just talking to people can, because it does give you that avenue through which to, like, experience something. Yeah, I feel like that is a solid point, my friend.
All right. Well, does anyone else? We're just about at time. So I was wondering if you guys had any sort of final thoughts about these games or anything in general that you wanted to express?
Yeah. I got a final thought. Fuck capitalism.
Oh, shit. It's pretty aggressive.
I think you could get a pretty good discussion, some quality discourse going on, like, Lovecraft capitalism intersection of, like,
well, Lovecraft was a capitalist.
Yeah, like, you just find, like a Lovecraft book hidden within, like, Marx's Capital, and within that you have, like, Keynes and Hayek, and, like, I don't know, it would work, kind of.
I love it.
But, yeah,
just write a book where it's Atlas Shrugged, but, like, everything Ayn Rand is just Cthulhu. Like, they all say the same things, ramble on about the same bullshit about objective truth in architecture or whatever, but it's all Cthulhu.
Atlas Shrugged doth riot like the Froggen, or however you say it.
Cthulhu Shrugged.
Cthulhu Shrugged.
That sounds like some great urban fantasy shit. Yeah. Like Cthulhu Shrugged, the Mind Flayer thought, I have to build this railroad.
See, we're back to shit posts.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, let's combine them. Cthulhu Shrugged.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have a final thought. I would say that playing these kinds of games has sort of helped me understand why or ways in which a game that has a narrative element doesn't have to lean all the way into that narrative element all the time, and that the game can be about, like, a feeling and experience more than about a story, which is not something that I'd experienced very well before. So Thanks for picking cool. Darkest Dungeon as a topic.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a very cool thought. I really liked what that had to say. Alright, so without further bow, we're going to move on to the ratings. Now, we're going to rate this. I have to get my officially sanctioned Department of Censorship recording guide. And thank you both for an adjective, an adjective discussion. Okay, no. No, that was great. I really like both of them, but everything you guys had to say. Now let's move on to the ratings. And we'll begin by having each one of you rate the topic based on a scale of 1 to 5 busts in the game, the way you upgrade your hamlet, your little village buildings, is by finding your family heirlooms, and somehow that negotiates to like a nicer roof somehow. Anyway, and bust is one of those. So out of 5, bust. What do you got?
Before we move on, there's a clip of the Animaniacs in which Dr. Scratch and Sniff says, "Stop playing with my bust," and then they do the whole "Good night, everybody." So,
great.
That's what I thought of. But you go first, since I interrupted with a stupid aside.
Oh no, I love that aside. That was a great aside. I'm going to give Darkest Dungeon 3.5 busts out of 5. So like 3 intact busts and like 1 decrepit, destroyed one that symbolizes the degradation of humanity, you know? I really like Darkest Dungeon. I like how they subvert like the common adventure story that's in video games. I love the Lovecraftian themes. I love the art. The art is amazing.
The art, I love the art too. It's beautiful. It was one of the deciding factors in me buying the game initially.
Yeah, the narrator is a blast. He's just so like over the top.
And over the tarp. Not getting any paint on this bitch.
Over the tarp sounds like an alternate history saying. Like it's slightly different. Like you fell into a different dimension. It's not super different, but like you catch it every once in a while. Yeah, that's really over the tarp. Am I right, guys? You over the top? What? No. The top of what? No.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's about it.
Thank you, Chowder. Chunapee.
I'm gonna give Darkest Dungeon 3 structurally sound busts.
Nice.
1 crumbly bust, and 1 bust that's just made of the void.
Like 3.5.
Yeah, so like, yeah, pretty much, I would say it's more like a 4, honestly.
All right.
I'd say that's more like a 4.
Like a 3.84, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because I do appreciate that it took kind of the Lovecraftian atmosphere and translated it so well into a game via gameplay. Even the particular word choices in the narration were very on point for that kind of thing.
They are archaic.
I really liked all the like the musical choices. I like really liked the art. My only reason why I cannot commit fully to this is that I feel like I would almost get too frustrated strategizing all the way through. At a certain point, that level of frustration would take me out of the game and like the appropriate level of frustration that I would need to become immersed. Like at a certain point, it would just be like, okay, now I have to like take myself out of this to strategize enough to advance.
Nah, I get that.
So like it kind of reaches that break for me because of its difficulty. And while it is a good thing to master difficult games and get that sense of accomplishment, I think it works a little bit against the game in this case.
Genevieve's stress has reached a peak, and now she's afflicted with frustration.
No, I get that. Like, there's this one, I mentioned him, I think, earlier. There's this one enemy called the Swine God. And like I said, you have to fight him like 3 times. And I recently beat him at his final form, the Swine God. Because it's like the Swine Prince, Swine King, Swine God.
You got the Heavenly Bacon?
Basically. And like, it's the same like attacks and stuff every time. It's the same enemy every time, but you have to defeat him like 3 times after you level up, right?
Mm-hmm. You had to cure that ham.
Yeah, but it took me a little bit longer to beat him than it probably should have because I had to wait a couple like weeks, like a couple rounds, because I couldn't go get him with my top party because like one of the guys became too stressed. And I had to wait for him to be de-stressed before sending out the rest of the party with, because I knew this combination was perfect for it. So I get like the frustration does happen. And like it kind of sucks when like sometimes there's not a lot you can do about it. Mm-hmm. Like I had recently against a different boss, the Hag.
Oh, the Hag's so annoying.
I had my like one of my best healers, the Vestals, die because they were constantly being taken out of the rotation and put in like the cauldron to be cooked by the Hag. And it eventually killed them. And I couldn't free them. Even though, like, the Hag wasn't that hard to beat.
Why couldn't the Hag just be a vegan Hag? Come on.
I don't know. I mean, I guess human sacrifice. I guess like, it's the murder aspect.
Yeah, although I think being frustrating is, like, kind of a part of the game. Like,
for sure.
What the game is trying to do. Yeah.
It is for sure part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be frustrated with how much you love it. So, alright guys, so now let's move on. You know, I've enjoyed all of you, but unfortunately now, I have to choose one of you to, you know, receive a gold star. In this form, the Golden Torch. In the game of the Darkest Dungeon, light is very important. If you don't have light, it's harder to do things, but you get more crits if it's darker somehow. But you're more likely to be surprised. That's why I'm surprising you all by giving Jonathy the Golden Torch.
Whoa! Heyo.
I really liked your analysis. It was close. There were really times where I was like, oh man, I don't know who I'm going to give this to. You guys were stressing me out. I was about to become like,
you had to pull out your torch.
Yeah,
to replenish your...
Keenan was afflicted with indecision.
Yeah. But I really liked the way you kind of like delve deep into a bunch of the themes and like how they relate to mechanics in general. Chatter, I did like a lot of what you had to say about capitalism. Very classic, you know, classic Chatter. If you don't know about Chatter, Chatter is
notably about how we should fuck it.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was my thought process. You know, now I'm going to read this silly little outro, but with my own spin on it. Now that is just about the end of it. Thank you, listeners, for listening, doing what you do best, to the Common Geeky Program. I am your host, Keenan Kodish, and you can find me... Oh, crap, I wasn't prepared for this. And you can find me, you know, probably... Oh, crap. No, I can't think of anything. Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank. I don't know if you guys actually listen to the things I say, but I usually try to think of something ridiculous way to find me.
In his own dungeon.
Yeah, I don't want to. I'm not trying to come on to the listeners. I mean, I am in a way, but not like that.
Oh no!
Once again, I am your host, Keenan Kodish, and you can find me pretty much. You know, I'm already there. Just like you, just have to think of meeting me. I'll show up. It's telepathic stuff, listeners. Come on,
get with it. Oh shit!
It's 1983. We're all, you know, immortals. Everyone uses magic. Anyway. Moving on, I have been joined by my lovely friends, Chowder.
Hi, I'm Taimul, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, and you can find me on Twitter, at Taimul Chowdhury. You can see how that's spelled in the description. I do art stuff there, so, yeah.
Art.
Go there for the art stuff.
Yeah, I am Jonavi, and I'm also on Twitter, at jkire1, if you would care to see what I Twitter out into the Twitter sphere.
Like it's tweet, technically? I'm just
don't tell me how to live my life.
Don't tell me how to Twitter, right?
It's my life. It's now or never. I ain't gotta live forever.
I don't think, you know, you should, like, communicate via blue bears ever, but that's just me. And next week, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, I believe one of you two are hosting our episode next week. Which one of that is it?
Yes, next week I am hosting that episode.
I love it.
I totally did not record that episode today at 11 o'clock a.m.
Cool, so tell me, what will you record in the future, unless you're trapped in the present?
Well, I will be recording and not have not already recorded. because it's in the future and not the past or the present.
Oh man, this guy's so trapped in the present, he's tied up with gift wrap.
Oh my god.
I will be talking about
to the cardboard.
Edgar Wright, and just having a episode all about Edgar Wright, his style, using Baby Driver as a focal point.
How he writes cinematic wrongs.
No, I don't know. Mumble.
Okay. Yeah. There's less capitalism in that one, hopefully. Yeah.
More populism, though.
And when will that one be airing?
That will be airing someday, eventually. I don't know.
Someday, Barnaby. That will be premiering the November 2nd, I believe.
November 2nd.
Yep. That's coming out November 2nd, folks. Tune in for Edgar Wright. Watch up on your Canelo trilogy. Watch Baby Driver, you know?
Yeah.
Baby Driver.
Image search him. Then get bored with his movies and watch more, like, Simon Pegg movies, and then, like, maybe find a few obscure Nick Frost roles that you can find, like Attack the Block, where he played a drug dealer.
Oh, man. Is this just a list episode, or just gonna bombard people with recommendations?
I love it. Let's do it. As always, folks, let's... Now, for all of you out here, out there in the intersphere, or radio sphere, or human sphere, or I'm not sure if we reach across dimensions, but any of those in the Eldritch community, we try not to discriminate. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. I'm not sure what the parallel is for dark dimensions where light and heat has never been felt. So you can, I guess, Google that. I'm sure they have Google in, you know.
Follow us in the absence of spirit.
Exactly, you know. Now, any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting hashtag CGP or hashtag Coders Cult, will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for our future episode.
Picking the topic!
Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and in your heart is a critical help to growing our show, and we'll read new reviews on the air.
We'll do it.
Do we have any new reviews?
Not that I know of, no.
All right, well, I guess we don't have any new reviews. So we'll just, you know, we'll ignore this, and then, you know, whatever. Anyway, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, and everything.
We appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next week, and I hope that you all feel great and aren't in danger of any occult sacrifice. Be well, listeners.
Goodbye!
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Keenan Kodish, joined by the representatives Taimul Chaudhary and Janavi Iyer. This episode is sponsored by Nothing, because fuck capitalism, am I right? The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, as well as Taimul Chaudhary, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week, we're going to be talking about Edgar Wright and Baby Driver specifically, so be sure to tune in for that on November 2nd. And as always, thank you for listening to this.
One time I was playing, I think it was Skyrim, and I was, like, constantly overcumbered. And so I checked, like, my inventory, and I had, like, 16 human skulls for some reason, and I don't know why my character had those.
Casually.
I was worried he was, like, sleepwalking and stuff, and also, like, when you, like, trade with your companions, do they see everything that's in your inventory? Because that's really concerning. I'm like, oh, sure, I'll carry, what the fuck is that thing? Oh, nothing. Here, take this sword and this gold and ignore the 16 human
they
skulls.
They secretly wanted to trade for the skulls the whole time, but they just felt embarrassed to ask.
Yeah, kind of want those fucking skulls.
I mean, skulls are pretty cool. I mean, that's why I got this mug. Who knew the insides of heads just tasted like peppermint tea? Not I.
Wow, way to be new to it.
I mean, collecting skulls is the best way to get ahead in life.
Hey.